Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk about Apple computers and accessories. And joining me is Joe Rhodes, a self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison. He's been supporting Macs professionally since 1999 and unprofessionally for several years before that. And you can find out more about what Joe is up to at joerhodes.com/WPR. Joe, it's a pleasure to have you back.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
And if people have comments and questions about their Macs, or perhaps they're thinking of selecting a Mac, why, you can call us in Madison at 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. And we do accept email at talk@wpr.org. Will a $199 iPhone win over the masses? Apple unveiled this upgraded iPhone with a faster internet connection and satellite navigation capabilities, priced $200 lower than current models, but with more expensive service. What are your thoughts, Joe, about this new item, which is supposed to be ready on the 11th of July?
Well, you know, Apple has really done the research. The new iPhone, I'm not going to say it is just a completely revolutionary new product. It's basically the same iPhone with a lot of enhancements. Apple really went to their customers, listened to what people wanted. For example, the iPhone has this brilliant mapping system from Google Maps. It's great. I use it all the time when I get lost in, well, pretty much everywhere I go. So it had a feature where it could look at the cell towers and kind of figure out where you were. Well, now it has a GPS chip built into it, and it can figure out exactly where it is. So that's a really nice advancement to have. Mm-hmm. And like you said, the internet connection is much faster, and it's so they really enhance it all the way around. But it's still the iPhone that we've all come to know and love. What Apple really did, though, what they really changed, obviously, is the price point. And it's not that they figured out how to make the phone $200 cheaper. Instead, what they're doing is they're doing kind of a model that's much more similar with the rest of the phone industry. Like, you go into a cellular store and you buy a phone, and they give it to you if you sign the contract. Well, the phone isn't free, but the cellular company is discounting that phone in favor of you signing a one-year or two-year contract. And that's kind of what Apple is doing now with the iPhone, where they hadn't been doing that before. They had some different revenue-sharing agreements and things like that. So essentially, Apple is getting $200 from AT&T when you sign a two-year contract. So they're getting the cost of the iPhone plus their $200, or that's what people are assuming. Mm-hmm. I actually don't know. I didn't see the agreement. They don't let me in on these things. Can you believe it?
I don't believe it, Joe. I really don't. Let's take a caller, and that's Steve in Madison, and I think he's right on track. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Good morning. Yes, I also have an iPhone-related question. I guess I really want to get an iPod Touch. Mm-hmm. I don't care about the phone part, but I want the video and the calendar and so forth.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering what you've heard about the price on the iPod Touch being reduced now that they reduced the phone.
Yeah, you know, that this really does set up a very interesting paradigm, because the iPhone is being subsidized by AT&T, and consequently it's, you know, as expensive or possibly even less expensive than the iPod Touch. Apple hasn't said a word about this. I just read this morning on some rumor sites, and now, of course, these are rumor sites, and they don't mean anything, but sometimes they're interesting to follow. Apparently, there are some shortages of supply with the iPod Touch now. Certain stores are starting to run out, and people are wondering if that means Apple is either going to introduce a new model or do something. And we really can't be any more clear than that. I haven't heard anything concrete that they're going to reduce the price of the iPod Touch. But like I said, there's $200 that AT&T is kicking in on the iPhone. It's going to be hard to replicate that on the iPod Touch because there's no service provider.
Right, but what about, I don't know, I've heard different things about, can you actually buy a phone and not activate it, or is that not going to work?
Well, it's hard to say with the new iPhone, because we haven't seen it yet. It hasn't, the details on how it's activated haven't even been released. But from what I'm hearing is it's not going to be a thing where you can take it home and activate it. The current iPhone, or I should now say the old iPhone, boy, that just sounds wrong. The original iPhone, how about that?
Mm-hmm.
That did not work at all until you took it home and you activated it. So my hunch is that it's probably not going to work. I mean, my guess would be Apple would do the same thing, where it's not going to work, because AT&T wants you to sign a two-year contract, otherwise they're not going to give you the phone, because they're kicking in $200. For that $200, they want you as a customer. So I doubt you'd be able to buy the iPhone and just not use the phone part of it, unless you went to AT&T and signed a year-long contract, but at that point or a two-year contract, but at that point you've got the thing, so.
Right, okay.
All right.
Steve, thank you very much for your call. We have lines open. If you have a question or a comment about Apple computers and accessories, the number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, toll free at 800-642-1234. Joe Rhodes is our guest today, and I have joerhodes.com up on my screen. And tell people what you offer to them after your appearances on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's frequent that I will, you know, I'll go back and I'll listen to this program afterwards. And one of the great parts about being a Wisconsin Public Radio member is you get to download this MP3. Hint, hint. So everyone go and become a WPR member. But I listen to the program afterwards and I go, wow, I could have answered that question a little bit better. Or, oops, I made a mistake there. Or maybe I wasn't clear. Or maybe there was some other answers that I missed. So I've got a blog going at joerhodes.com/WPR. And I try to follow up on some things that we cover on the show. Or if I get some email questions and I get a lot of questions about the same topic, and I'm mm-hmm. like, well, clearly this is a salient topic for people, I try and hit that on my blog. To be perfectly honest, the last couple months, it's fallen into a little bit of disrepair because I've been very busy doing lots of other things, you know, buying a house.
Bought a house.
Bought a house, yeah. I'm getting ready for the Act 6 ride. There's just been a lot of stuff going on, but I do get to the blog when I can and try and answer questions. Unfortunately, I don't have the capability to get back to everyone's email individually, and I wish I did have that time. But if I do see a pattern of questions of emerging, I try to get that on my blog because that's probably information that people are looking for.
Apple is offering a new version of its backup service. It's $99 a year .Mac backup service. How different is MobileMe?
MobileMe versus .Mac. This is kind of neat. Essentially, they're changing the name because Apple is clearly moving away from a strictly Mac platform with the iPhone and the iPod, things like that. They're really reaching out to Windows users. So I think part of this is an effort to brand it as something that's not necessarily tied to the Mac. But the other thing that this really does, it does basically all the same things that .Mac did. So you get an email address, you get a certain amount of storage where you can put files on, you get to synchronize your contacts and all of that, and that's all really nice. But one of the things that they really added on that's going to be fantastic is if you have an iPhone, and I would imagine an iPod Touch, although they really didn't talk about this, but right now you put, say you're on your computer and you put an appointment on your calendar, that doesn't show up on your iPhone until you put your iPhone in the cradle and it synchronizes. Well, with the new system, that's going to happen wirelessly. You put an appointment on your calendar or you add a contact to your address book. That is going to get pushed up to your MobileMe account and then pushed back down to your iPhone. So you put an appointment on your computer. There's no syncing required. It just automatically shows up on your iPhone. And I'm actually really excited about that because there's been a number of appointments where I put it on my computer, I forgot to connect my iPhone to my computer, and then I go out in the field and go, I know I have something tomorrow, but it's not on my phone. So this is going to, you know, basically you won't have to connect your phone to your computer as religiously because it's just going to happen, you know, bang.
All right.
So it's also going to work with PCs. So if you have Microsoft Outlook, you'll be able to, and I don't think you can do this now, you'll be able to put stuff on your schedule there, and it will also automatically sync back. Or if you have multiple computers, if you have a Mac at home, Outlook at work, something like that, all of these things will be able to stay synchronized with your schedule, your contacts, your email. And that that's going to make a lot of people's lives pretty neat.
Joe Rhodes is our guest. Let's go next to Vince in Oak Creek. And Vince, what's on your mind this morning?
Hi, Vince.
Hi. Yeah, I'm really considering getting the iPhone, but I'm wondering if I get some details about the AT&T contract. Would I be paying extra minutes and things for all of my internet use on the iPhone, or how does that work?
Well, here's the information that I've learned so far. And I'm currently an iPhone subscriber, and basically how it works is the calling plans are exactly the same. It doesn't matter what phone you have. And then you basically add on a data package on top of that. And the data packages are, it's basically a one price thing, and it's an all-you-can-eat thing. So you don't have to worry about, you know, how many kilobytes did you download or anything like that. So basically you pick a calling plan you like, and then you add a data package onto it. Now, with the new iPhone, the data packages are $10 more expensive than the old iPhone. But the flip side of that is you'll be able to download a lot more stuff because it comes in so much faster. And it's actually much more in line with there's nothing special about the iPhone pricing. It's the same pricing they're charging with the rest of the third generation phones. Basically, AT&T is saying, because you can download this so much faster and you can get so much more, we're going to hit you for $10 more per month. So the pricing of it, I think mine is, my whole bill comes to around $90 a month. I have 900 minutes, anytime minutes, and unlimited data. And I've, I never hit 900 minutes a month, but I'm hit enough that I can't go down to the next one below that. So, but that's basically what my service is. So my service will probably go up to $100 a month if I were to get the new iPhone. But you don't have to think about, you can surf the web as much as you want. You don't have to, think about what you keep track of, any of that. And that's kind of nice.
Yeah. Are there any multiple line discounts? Like right now we've got two phones with Sprint, and we, if we went with two phones with AT&T, do they give you a break on that?
Boy, I really don't know because I've never looked. I'm sure if you go to AT&T.com, they've got, I think, a link right at the top that says wireless, and they can probably tell you a little bit about the plans, and I'm sure they have family plans. I just don't know exactly what the numbers look like for the iPhone. But I, the calling plans are basically the same across any of their phones, so I would imagine you could compare those pretty easily.
Great. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Our guest again, Joe Rhodes. Our number in Madison, 263-1890. Otherwise, toll-free at 800-642-1234 as we talk about Apple computers and accessories. Let's go next to Andy in Sheboygan. Good morning, Andy.
Hey, Andy. Good morning. I have a question. Do the Macintosh have an interface that makes things simple for senior citizens? I know PCs have that, and does the Mac?
Well, they have, I don't know if it's necessarily geared for senior citizens, excuse me, but they do have something, and I hope this doesn't sound pedantic, but they do have an interface that is called a Simple Finder, typically geared for children who maybe won't understand all of the menus or the buttons and things like that, and it kind of cleans things up so there's only a few things for them to click on.
I'm sorry, is that something you could go down to the Apple Store and they would show you, demonstrate that? Okay.
Yeah, basically what you do is you set up a new account, and in that account you set up a preference so that they will have what's called a Simple Finder. And so that kind of, strips out some of the extraneous stuff so that there's fewer choices. And sometimes fewer choices makes things easier for people to learn. If you go into a store and there's only two products, it's pretty easy to, compare the two and pick one. If you go into a store that has 100 products, it's a much more daunting task to narrow it down. So I think that's what Apple was trying to do. But yeah, it is built in there. It's strangely enough under parental controls.
okay.
So it's like I said, I hope that doesn't sound pedantic. If you're explaining this to the receiver of this computer, you might want to leave that part out.
Excellent. All right. Thank you.
All right, Andy. Thank you very much. We appreciate hearing from you. And we'll take more of your calls from Jill, Mike, Tom, and your call coming up in just a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk about Apple computers and accessories with Joe Rhodes of Madison. At 11:45, we'll be talking with Reggie McLeod and Pamela Iden of Big River Magazine. That's the magazine of the Upper Mississippi Valley. And we'll find out what's been going on there and what people can expect downriver. Next, we go to Joe in Spring Green. Hi, Joe. What's on your mind?
Well, in 2006, I bought a MacBook, a black MacBook, and I've had a problem with the screen flicker ever since then. And I'm wondering if your guest knows anything about that. I've had it repaired twice, and I'm just wondering if Mac has done anything to sort of rectify that long term instead of keep repairing it until my AppleCare protection wears out.
I can't say I've heard anything in particular about that. I know there's been issues with screens on portables, kind of on and off through the different models. And if it's flickering, it does sound like something of a hardware issue. I can't say I have any insight on that other than, keep taking it back to them. And eventually Apple's going to go, oh, we had a bad run of flux capacitors or whatever it is that controls the screen. I know there were some issues with, I think, MacBook Pros where they had to, it actually was fixed with a software update. It was actually the graphics card. But I can't say I know of anything off the top of my head on that one.
Okay. All right, I'll just keep going back then.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, good luck.
Joe, thank you very much for the call. And again, if you'd like to get your question or comment in Madison, it's 263-1890. Otherwise, toll free at 800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Tom in Viroqua is next. Hi, Tom.
Yes, good morning. I've been a Mac user forever. And for years, I used Denobus Canvas, a multi-purpose graphics program that did painting, bitmap manipulation, object-oriented stuff bordering on CAD, page layout, slideshow. You know, just pretty much you could do everything all on the one program. Mm-hmm. And now it seems, well, they got bought out and then discontinued, and the old versions are pretty unstable on the new platforms. And I'm looking for something to substitute that, but it seems to me to get those same kinds of resources into one document, you know, you'd need Quark Express, Adobe Acrobat, Photoshop, and, you know, who knows what else to, yeah, you know, to do those whole things, and then they don't integrate it. You don't have one document. Can you recommend something that begins to approach that level of real structural unity within one program for graphics work?
Well, I haven't seen too many programs that do everything in one. The general trend is people are kind of starting to break them out into individual pieces, but have them work together a little bit better. And the one I'm thinking of specifically, Adobe, is kind of the champion of this, where they have the Creative Suite, where they have Acrobat, Illustrator, Photoshop, InDesign, and all of them know about each other. So you can pull in an Illustrator file into a InDesign document. InDesign is a page layout program. And you can take your vector image from Illustrator and pull it in there, and you can double-click on it and edit it in Illustrator and then come back and do things like that. but I can't say I know of a single program that's been, you know, that's handles all of those tasks. I think part of the issue is over the years, people have demanded more and more out of their, say, bitmap image editor, and over their vector editor, and over their page layout program, that to try and squeeze it all into one program, it starts to get so big and the interface becomes so clunky that they kind of had to split them apart. And that's, you know, that's really where Adobe's headed, and they're kind of the biggest of all of these.
Spending like $3,000 on all these different programs.
Yeah, that's the other thing is, you know, Adobe has put a huge amount of work into this, but then they also charge you for that huge amount of work. There are a couple of programs you might want to try, and to be honest, they're not as Mac-friendly, but they are free, which makes it a, you know, kind of a zero-cost barrier to give it a try. There's a program called GIMP, G-I-M-P, Graphics Image Manipulation Program, and they have a version of that will run on Mac OS X. And there's another program called Inkscape, which is a page layout program. And these are both open source programs, and their GIMP is analogous to Photoshop. Inkscape is analogous to, say, InDesign or Quark. And it doesn't hurt to give them a try, just because you don't have to spend $3,000 and see if, you know, they're not going to be as Mac friendly because they weren't written specifically for Mac OS X, but they will run on Mac OS X. So if you're willing to kick the tires a little bit and give it a try, they may hit some of what you want to do.
I mean, I've already bought Quark and Photoshop and all of these other things too. But you just can't. You know, you're not working in one program. It's extremely awkward. Well, yeah. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. We appreciate hearing from you, Tom. And on to Mike in Budson.
In Budson, yes, in Marquette County.
Okay.
I was curious on that Mobile Me. Mm-hmm. And the push technology, would that work with your if you're connected in a Wi-Fi area or a hotspot, as well as just through the normal cell connection?
Well, you know, it's hard to say because we haven't seen it yet. Mobile Me comes out in July with the updated iPhone software and the iPhone. And I should point out that the Mobile Me and all that'll actually work with the existing iPhone. So all of us existing iPhone owners, hooray, we get that too.
There hasn't been anything specifically said on...
No, but my understanding is it's supposed to work on whatever network you happen to have. So if you're on a cellular network, it can push that data down through the cellular network. If you're on a Wi-Fi network, and how all of this works is not been revealed. It's still, you know, underneath the curtain or behind the curtain. But supposedly, however your iPhone, I don't know if your iPhone checks in every so often to let Apple know where you are, network speaking, not physically speaking.
Right.
But somehow it is supposed to work on either. And, you know, Apple is usually pretty good on this kind of stuff. I think they've made it pretty smooth, so I can't imagine that it wouldn't work if you're, say, at a coffee house on a Wi-Fi network versus if you're out on the road on a cellular network.
Yeah, or in my case particularly, my house isn't in an AT&T area, but if you've got Wi-Fi in your own house,
yeah,
I just just don't see how it could find you there.
Well, yeah, and that's going to be because theoretically you're behind a firewall or a router. And the short answer is I don't know, and we'll find out in July.
All right,
Mike. Thank you very much. We'll get him back and see if we can come up with the answers on that. Gary in Milton is next. Hello, Gary.
Hello. I had a question, but first a comment on just a recent call about Denuba Canvas. They were bought out by ACD Systems a few years ago. It was originally a Mac program, but ACD has now abandoned the Mac platform, but they are still supporting Canvas and for Windows machines. So another option for your caller would be to run Windows on an Intel-based Mac, like with Parallels Desktop or Bootcamp, and that would be a possible option. And particularly if you're a previous owner, you might be able to get an upgrade price for the Windows version. My question is about a flash drive. I bought about a 4 gigabyte flash drive or thumb drive a couple of years ago. I believe the brand is Aptiva, and this drive came partitioned.
Mm-hmm.
One of the partitions appears on my desktop like a virtual CD-ROM drive.
Sure.
And it's got maybe 400 or 500 megabytes, and then the rest is like a regular erasable thumb drive. And I have, and the CD-ROM virtual drive has some Windows software that I have no need for, and I cannot, for the life of me, figure out how to erase that. So I just have a single partition. When you go into Apple's Disk Utility, it appears again as a CD-ROM drive, so it's like a locked drive.
Hmm.
You know what the solution would be for that? I'm a fairly savvy Mac user. I've used Macs since 84, so I know my way under the hood a little bit, but this one I can't figure out.
Yeah. I was just going to ask if that, have you been able to repartition it with Disk Utility?
No.
Oh, that's
no,
so that.
You can partition the part that appears like a regular hard drive, but the icon for the CD-ROM drive, it's just like a, you know, hardwired CD disk.
Yeah, and it's entirely possible that it literally is hardwired into that chipset. They may have done that on purpose so that you can't erase drivers or something like that. Because from a support standpoint, if somebody calls them, they can always say, go to that other part and reinstall the drivers. So it's entirely possible that it might just be physically hardwired into that thing.
Okay. Well, that's kind of what I thought you would say. That leaves it's only 200 megabytes, but next time I'm going to make sure I don't buy a thumb drive like that.
Yeah. If you've tried to repartition it already and you can't get rid of that, then it's probably built into the hardware.
I see. Okay, thanks very much.
All right, Gary, thank you for your call. Our guest is Joe Rhodes. He is a self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison. Find out more about what he's up to at joerhodes.com/WPR, and Rhodes is R-H-O-D-E-S, new homeowner Joe Rhodes. Let's go next to Judy in Milwaukee. Judy, what's on your mind today?
Hi. A lot of the things I've been listening to this morning are quite beyond me, but what happened is I have lost the computer, my PC that I had. It died after about 7 years, and I'm looking at purchase of a new system. My daughter has Mac, and I've been real impressed with it, but it's quite a bit more expensive than some of the other units I've been looking at.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, what are the advantages that Mac has over the Microsoft Windows? I guess, what are your suggestions as far as things to look at with that new system?
Sure.
And Leopard is their new one. Is Tiger still available?
It's available, although I don't know if it runs on the new machines or not. Let me just put out a caveat first. So you're asking me what the advantages are of Apple over Windows. And, of course, you're asking an Apple guy, so you're going to get a slanted answer. On that note, here's my personal opinion. Yes, Apple computers, if you just look at the sticker prices, do tend to be a bit more expensive. But what you don't see is the Apple computers typically include a lot of things that are extra on the PC. And by the time you get it, by the time you add up all the feature list, you start to go, well, actually the price difference really isn't that big. In some cases, the Apples are even less. But, when you just look at the two stickers at Best Buy on the shelf and you see a $200 or $300 difference, that looks to be pretty big. Now, why would you choose this more expensive, more deluxe computer versus, something that's a little more stripped down? My humble opinion is that if you're not incredibly computer savvy, Apple computers tend to be easier to use. The interface tends to be much more consistent, so it makes it a little bit faster to learn. A button that says, I'm going to do this, it's always going to do that. There's not as many bizarre error messages. I actually support both in the businesses I work at. I support PCs and Macs. And it's always just kind of amazed me that the just fairly random incomprehensible errors that pop up on a Windows PC, even for me. And I'm going, what does this mean? And where did it come from? And how come I did it twice before and it was fine? The third time it gave me the error message. And the fourth time it was fine again. I don't see that as often on the Mac. Now, the other thing that for you as a consumer that'll probably be very interesting is when you buy a Mac, they come with a whole bunch of software that's incredibly easy to use and very powerful, full-featured. It's not a light version. It's not going to ask you to buy the full feature after 2 weeks or anything like that. And it makes it very easy to work with a digital camera, a digital video camera. It makes it very easy if you want to write a web page or start doing these things. It's incredibly simple to do. I was trying to get through today's entire program without talking about my mom, but it always happens once. My mom, her VCR is still flashing 12 o'clock, but she has figured out how to email me photos and manipulate these photos and do things like that. And, you know, this is stuff I just don't think she'd be able to do if she were using a Windows PC because it's just not as cohesive, it's not as straightforward, it's not as consistent. So that's why I tend to favor Macs more than PCs.
And is there information about viruses? I know the Windows are very susceptible to viruses, and I had heard that Mac is really not. So do you still have to purchase virus protection for the Apple?
Well, you know, right now there are no known viruses in the wild for the Mac, or if there are, there's like one or two. It's not a very high-profile target, but I should add the word yet. You know, eventually there will be viruses for Mac OS X. It's going to happen. Eventually they're going to sell enough of them that people are going to be interested in writing viruses for it. But at the present, there's really not a lot of threats out there that bother a Mac. Having said that, it's not a bad idea to buy antivirus software, but you're only going to find a few titles that are Mac-specific. The one I'd probably steer you towards if you'd really like to get something is by a company called Intego. Their interface is a little odd, but they don't seem to be... I've used Norton. It just really kind of made the Mac experience really miserable, so I kind of steer away from that one. But yeah, I can't really in good conscience say don't bother with antivirus software because that's just not good practice. But I would, you know, buy something like Intego. You know, if you go to the Apple Store, have them help you out with that, or they might have a recommendation too, but that's usually pretty good when I've got that on mine.
Is there like a free download on that?
It's not free. No, you have to buy it.
Okay, because I know there are some free ones out that I've used in the past.
Yeah, there are some free ones. The thing with the free ones is they're not as comprehensive. So if you get one of the free ones, it's kind of a reactive thing where you have a file, you suspect it might be damaged, so you scan it. The ones that you pay for, they're more proactive, so they're always looking for new files and they check them out right away, hopefully preventing you from being infected versus helping you clean up afterwards.
Terrific. Thank you very much.
All right, Judy, thank you very much for your call. And let's go to Minneapolis to Joanne. Hi, Joanne. What's on your mind this morning?
Hi there. I have an iPhone. In fact, I'm speaking on it right now, and I love it. And my question is, what should I buy a new one when the new ones come out? I understand that you're going to be able to download some of the features onto an existing iPhone, but what are the advantages of upgrading?
Well, the big things you will get, you know, because the original and the new iPhone will both get the same software. Here's what you'll end up with on the new iPhone. And you're going to end up with faster web browsing when you're using the cellular part. So when you're, say, away from your home wireless network or a coffee shop or something like that, you're just out on the road, you'll be able to download web pages and email much faster. And the other thing you'll be able to do is if you're looking at Google Maps, you'll be able to pinpoint your current location much more precisely than you can with the way we do it now. There are some other minor enhancements, you know, better battery life, things like that. You'll be able to hold a conversation and browse the web at the same time, which is something you can't do right now. So those are probably lesser things that you would get. This is a question I've been asking myself because, you know, at $200, that's almost impulse buy. And I've decided I'm going to hold on to my existing iPhone just because those additional features, that additional speed and the GPS would be nice, but not must-haves. The big feature increase really comes with the free software update that we're all going to get. So.
And then will the AT&T contract, the $10 enhanced contract, only apply to new phones?
Only applies to new phones.
Okay.
All right.
I don't know. I still may have to go for a new one.
They are darn appealing, aren't they?
You are close to an iPhone store, so you should be able to get information as soon as it's available. Joanne, thank you very much for your call. And on to Chris in Madison. Chris, what can we do for you?
Hi, thanks. I have a quick piece of advice for the guy with the flash drive.
Yeah.
I think what that is a really onerous piece of advertising software called U3 that comes on flash drives. It came on mine, and you can only get rid of it on a Windows machine, and when you do, it erases the drive.
Really?
But it gets rid of all of the advertising junk that comes with the thing.
So if you plug this into a Windows drive, and then do you have to have like a U3 remover?
Yeah, on their website, it's u3.com/uninstall. And
okay.
Then there's a special thing you can get rid of the junk that's on there.
No kidding. Okay. Well, that's good data to have. So maybe it's not built into the hardware, but just, incredibly sticky.
Right. I think it's part of the way they make those drives cheaper was they put this really onerous advertising program on the thing. And then so the drive costs less because these guys paid to put it on.
No kidding. Okay, my understanding was this was just a collection of drivers and readmes and things like that, but it sounds like not.
Yeah, if it's the same one that I have.
Okay, well, it can't hurt to try.
Okay, bye.
All right, Chris, thank you very much. We appreciate your call and that update there. Joe, Apple, which once kept its Safari browser confined within its own devices, is now making a push to get it onto computers of people who use Windows PCs, correct?
Yeah, and to be perfectly honest, I'm not entirely sure what the big sell is for them. I think what they were initially, I think it was, the Safari web browser is the browser on the iPhone. And Apple clearly imagines the iPhone and the iPod Touch really being a mass market appeal, not just Mac users, but Mac and PC users. And so developers, we needed some way to see if the web application we wrote for the iPhone was going to run properly. And so my hunch is that's why they put it on the PC. I don't see it being something that's going to make them a lot of money. I think Apple is more interested in building a browser, and lately they've been doing things with the browser that have made it much, much faster at doing things like with JavaScript. And you can see, especially from their new Mobile Me set of applications that are coming out, they've written some web applications that make really heavy use of JavaScript. And my suspicion is they wanted to make sure that there was a browser out there that ran JavaScript really, really fast and did a really good job of it. And I think this might be a case where Apple decided, well, we're not going to count on Microsoft to write a browser that's going to handle this. We're going to force the issue. We're going to write one. We're going to make sure it does this really well. So if people want a very fast JavaScript, and the reason JavaScript is so important, back in the old days, we had web pages that were very static. Well, these days we have web pages that we can, click on buttons, drag things around, resize windows, all of that sort of thing. And that's all done in JavaScript. So it's very important that that runs fast and efficiently. And yeah, I think this might be Apple's. I don't think they're really trying to invade the market for, trying to make Safari the world's biggest browser. But I think they're trying to make sure that there's a really good alternative and that's consistent from the iPhone to your PC. So some people might like the way it looks on the iPhone so much that they might want it on their PC.
Do you expect an iTouch upgrade?
Yeah, I do. Just because Apple, just revamped the iPhone totally, I would be very surprised if they didn't enhance the iPhone in some way. How soon that's going to come and what it's going to look like is really hard to say.
So if somebody said, will that browser play web radio, you wouldn't be able to tell them just yet.
Yeah, I can't say for sure. The understanding I have right now, the way Apple, they're making it possible so people can write applications for the iPhone and the iPod Touch. But as of right now, you can't write a plugin. So you can't, for example, write a plugin that'll go into the Safari browser on the iPhone or the iPod Touch that would say, play Wisconsin Public Radio for you, because Apple won't let you write a plugin for the browser yet.
All right. Thanks very much for that email from Pat in Madison. Let's go to Jim in St. Croix Falls. Hello, Jim.
Hi. I'd like some advice on buying a used notebook.
Okay.
Models to avoid, maybe models to look for, any way to test them, see if they're working right.
Yeah. Well, the testing part, the most straightforward way is you turn them on, make sure they boot up, and make sure you can do things like connect to a wireless network, connect to a wired network, which may or may not be something you have available when you're looking at a used Mac. Obviously, I don't know how old a laptop you're looking at, but I would make sure it has at least a G4 processor. There are some iBooks that had G3 processors, and those are pretty much, not supported at this point. And if you can, see if you can get a G4 processor that's at least 867 megahertz or faster. The reason I say that is because Apple's newest 10.5 only runs on something that's 867 megahertz or faster. And I think most of the recent Mac laptops, like if you're looking at a PowerBook or even a MacBook Pro, or a MacBook, those are all, you know, all the Intel processor machines, those are fine. But if you go back to the G4s, I mean, you're going to have to get pretty old before you get a machine that's not at least, you know, a 1,000 megahertz or a gigahertz.
Okay.
The bigger issue, though, is just make sure you have plenty of memory, plenty of RAM. There's really no reason not to have a computer that has 2 gigabytes of RAM.
How many?
I'd say 2 gigs, okay. Honestly. And, you know, even if it doesn't have it included, you can easily go online and find, you know, how much it's going to cost to add it. And it's usually, you know, $40 or $50.
Oh, so, great.
But having 2 gigs of RAM really does make Mac OS X run faster.
Okay.
All right, Jim, good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call. And Joe in Sun Prairie, let's get you into the conversation. Go ahead.
Yes, recently installed Firefox 3.
Yeah.
On my G4 800 with OS 10.4, whatever the newest release is.
Okay.
And have one small problem.
Yeah.
Go to a discussion forum and try to submit a posting to the forum, and I get a message back from the forum saying, sorry, you can only access this page from the forum, and I'm in the forum.
Mm.
This doesn't happen on any other browser I have, didn't happen on Firefox 2. And was just wondering if you had any ideas. I tried enabling third-party cookies, made sure there were no proxy entries, pretty much the standard stuff that you might check.
Yeah. No, my hunch is more likely it's an incompatibility between Firefox 3 and this website. I've actually run into a couple of websites where Firefox 3 really, you know, made life hard.
Mm-hmm.
And the short answer is, you know, some of the websites, because it's just come out of beta, I mean, they've only released the official version for a couple of days, and a lot of websites just aren't doing much with it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But you can actually have both on your Mac.
Okay.
The trick is you have to, you know, since they're all called Firefox, you have to change the name of one of them, say maybe Firefox-3,
mm-hmm.
and then download the old Firefox 2,
mm-hmm.
and put a -2 on it, and then you can have both.
Mm-hmm.
My hunch is, you know, it's just an incompatibility between Firefox 3 and that page.
Yeah. You know, what I'm seeing is that other members of the forum put Firefox on their Macs, and it came, and they're working, which is strange. But
it's because it's so new, and I really have run into several web pages where it just gave some very bizarre errors. The team that makes Firefox, they really have totally revamped it in version 3. They've really done some great work there.
Yes, yeah, it's impressively fast.
It's impressively fast. It looks very Mac-like. I mean, they've done a great job. But when you change something that radically, you're bound to run into some situations that don't quite work properly.
Very good.
All right, Joe, thank you very much. We appreciate hearing from you. I'm sorry we can't get to more calls, but the time has expired.
Yikes.
Joe, it's been a pleasure, and we'll get you back and find out what happens after the 11th of July.
That would be a very exciting time.
Joe Rhodes is a self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison, and you can find out more about what he does and thinks at www.joerhodes.com/WPR. Our thanks to Sarah Carroll for on-air phone production today. I'm Jim Packard. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.